I thought we could maybe benefit from a little bit of guided meditation. So if you're not completely comfortable, make yourself comfortable. There might be a few more people coming in, and we'll just let that blend into the background. Take a few deep breaths.
It's okay.
So I've been talking about working with our feelings, not just the pleasant, painful, or neither pleasant nor painful feeling of Vedana, but also the more involved, perhaps, mental states, emotions that we have that often are what drive us. We feel hurt or sad or threatened, or maybe the positive side too, feeling some comfort or pleasant feeling that causes us to speak or act in ways that might be skillful, but they also might be ways that are unskillful. So it's very important to practice being with those feelings. And to be with feeling is different from being immersed in the feeling. So we start by calming the mind, calming the body. Positioning ourselves so that we're at ease with as little discomfort as we can manage. I often use my breathing as a way to become calm, and that's perhaps a different approach than you have. Sometimes people have to do a bit more preparation before the breath becomes available as an object that we can use for meditation. But if you're used to breath meditation, then maybe you can use the breath as a way to just, you might say, go inside. Become calm and relaxed. Now your mind may have certain tendencies, like becoming sleepy or becoming restless. Or sometimes the mind's tendency is to just become very, very still. But in this particular meditation, I'm going to ask you to bring an incident to mind. Maybe it's one specific incident where irritation arose, or resentment, a negative feeling. It could even be anger, but I'd rather you choose, since we have a short amount of time and this is pretty impersonal, to choose something that's not the biggest challenge you have. But not the most minor one either. Something you can actually bring to mind that causes a negative feeling to arise. And because you're sitting in meditation or some degree of quiet and calm internally, you can view this feeling as an object, not as your whole experience in this moment. And when that incident, or maybe just that feeling that comes frequently to you of irritation or restlessness or anger, resentment, when that comes, see if it needs a little boost because it's very faint, perhaps, or if it's very strong. Just use it as it is. And locate the place in your body where it feels the strongest. You can take a moment or two to do that. And then just stay present with that feeling wherever you locate it. Could be your heart and your throat, your stomach, wherever in the body. Sometimes people have a hard time doing this. Maybe they're not used to really sensing their emotions through the body itself. So whatever strong emotion, in that case, whatever strong emotion that you can bring up to accompany a thought, you bring a thought into the mind, a memory that has a feeling attached to it, and then see how your body feels. Has something changed because of the arising of that thought? And right now, we can also hear this music, and maybe there are feelings that arise in you because of the music. Or maybe you had an intense, relatively intense interaction with someone recently. And when you think of that, there's a strong feeling or moderate feeling that arises. And when you notice that feeling, when you've got a good sense of it and you feel where it arises in the body, just see if you can keep your attention there. Now that can be difficult if it's fairly painful. Remember that this is a mental feeling. It's not coming from the body. It's just being sensed through the body. In the mind, when there's an unpleasant feeling, it often tries to do something else. The mind would like to have an escape from an unpleasant feeling. So observe if you are feeling this unpleasant feeling. Maybe it's in your heart center. Maybe it's in your belly. Maybe it's somewhere else. But when you stay present with it, sometimes there is an intensity that builds because you want to get away. We don't want to have unpleasant feeling. We want to escape sometimes through fantasy, through getting sleepy, through intellectualizing and trying to look at this experience intellectually. And so when we go up into our head, we're not with the feeling anymore. If we slap labels on it, we're not really with the feeling anymore. Go and see if you can come back to the feeling. And if you feel completely lost with these instructions, just notice how your body feels. And let your mindfulness take you into a deeper state of calm. And then invite a memory that created unpleasant feeling. Maybe some recollection of conflict. Now, when we're sitting with this unpleasant feeling in the body, then we can observe it and watch it change. Because feelings are impermanent. It's always impermanent. There was a man visiting Ajahn Chah wanting his advice. He said that he was an angry person. And he wanted to know what to do. He said he had so much anger. What do I do? And I think Ajahn Chah knew that this man had tried the normal things to try to calm his anger, but he couldn't do it. And he told the man to stay angry. Just stay angry. See how long you can stay angry. Well, of course, anger doesn't really last. You can refuel the fire with more of the angry thoughts. But if you stop doing that, the feeling itself will change and fade. But then as we observe that feeling, And we're looking at the body and we're not thinking about the incident anymore. And that's really key, to set aside the event or the experience. And we really just feel it in the body. What was the feeling? Was it feeling hurt? There's a lot of different kinds of feelings, emotions. And how does it feel? Is it a big area that it's covering? Is it hot, cold? What's its temperature? You can even ask, like, what is the texture of this feeling? Spongy, spiky. You might even associate a color with this feeling. One question we can ask, it may feel like it's getting more heady, but not really. It's meant to be a question asked of our depths, our intuition. When do I recall the earliest time I felt this feeling? Or is there some kind of element in the context when I feel this feeling, like maybe being tired or hungry, or in a certain person's contact with a certain person? And we don't focus on the person, we focus on the feeling. But we're learning, we're investigating and learning about what makes us tick, really. Why we feel the way we feel, why we react the way we react. Well, when we're feeling and working through feeling in the body, we're not immediately supplanting it or overlaying loving kindness, for example. That's another approach. But this feeling as it appears in the body, feeling what we experience, this is more about trying to let it clear from the body memory and really allowing the root basis of this feeling reaction to arise. And also, without overlaying the feeling with, trying to cover it up with loving kindness, we can bring an attitude of loving kindness to this feeling. acceptance. Every time we become quiet and we pay attention to a strong emotion that we're feeling and observe it, different things can happen. And if you had a clear sense or snapshot, if you will, of how this felt when it first came to mind, and how it feels now. Notice the change. And in any particular meditation session, you might learn something about yourself or become more comfortable with the feeling you have. And as we do become more comfortable, when I say accept it, it's not like it's something we want to perpetuate, just that we are able to be with the way things are in the moment. With an attitude of warmth, kindness, gentleness. And letting go. And now we're going to bring this meditation to a close. You might want to end with some gratitude for your body. Gratitude for being able to have the mindfulness of feeling. And gratitude for the Dhamma. So in this last period of time, I'd like to see if you have any questions or comments, or did I miss anything? I read the description of what was promised for today. Anything missing? Yes, Shai.
Suggestion.
Well, so the just for the sake of folks who might not have been able to hear her, the experience was that it was very hard to locate a strong negative feeling. Like anger hasn't come up in a long time. Yes. Hooray, right? And the acknowledgement that when you've finished raising your family and maybe you're not having to have work responsibilities out in the world, I don't know, I think that's might be the case, then maybe there aren't as many pokes at us. But I think also there's the development and the practice, and it's great if our aversion and even our excitement over sensual pleasures becomes less and less, and we become more equanimous. So the observation was that it's easier to find a depressive state or that kind of, in the side of negativity, that might be more what happens. So when we feel that, we also can locate a place in the body, but we can bring kind attention to that so that we're not suppressing. And we might find there's something underneath that feeling. So, this little 25 minute or whatever it was, meditation instruction is really just a taste of what we can do on our own when we have our own timing and we have our own space to really work with what our emotions are, what our mental states are, and giving it that kind attention of, okay, there's this dullness here, so where do I feel that? And as was mentioned before, we can use meditation, becoming still, as a way to open the mind, to have access to the intuition, you might say, or the understanding, the wisdom that's beneath it, beneath our consciousness, and then see what arises. And another approach, of course, whatever the negative emotional pattern is to seek support from someone to talk to. Could be a professional who's, trained and experienced in helping people. It could be someone in our life who's really willing to listen and won't take sides of whatever we've said, won't tell anyone else what we're talking about, and just be a kind presence. I don't know if that answers the question or gives you any pointer. Yeah, sometimes it takes some time to really be with our emotions enough to start to kind of see into them. And we can also use methods like feeding your demons. I really kind of find that helpful. Some people find that helpful. You can get the book by Lama Soltra Mahalyoni and read it and see about following her process. And or there are other formats you can use. Focusing is another book. Another student of Carl Rogers, Eugene Gimlin. Gimlin, I never know how to say it, but very good, kind of investigation into using mindfulness, really. Didn't call it that, I don't think, but yeah. So just talking about, where does this depression come from and how do we work with it? And the recognizing that reaching out can really make a difference,
Yeah, because it's like selfing. It's like
It is
compassion to
selfing.
yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Selfing, and if we can even like bring more of the sort of the praise and joy of and adoration of the Buddha, Dhamma, enlightened Sangha, more of that, but also reaching out. We're so isolated oftentimes if we live alone or we aren't going to work anymore and the family's off doing their own thing or whatever. It's good to reach out, develop that Kalyanamitta Sangha. And yeah. So the question is really related to this idea that fewer responsibilities, does that make less anger? Is the monastic, does a monastic have fewer responsibilities than a lay person and therefore less anger? No, I don't think that's it. I think what it is the more we develop the mind, the less desire or aversion we have. Also, the less delusion we have, that calms all of these strong emotions. Whether we have responsibilities, I only meant that, sometimes if we're triggered by the way other people act or, circumstances, that could bring up more of whatever the feeling pattern is for us, but it's not really the cause. The cause for our desire, the cause for our aversion, it's never what's outside of us. The problem is internal. And it's internal whether you're in robes or you're not. You still have to work with it. So that's why, too, in the meditation, there was just this at the beginning. I don't know how clear I made this at the time, but at the beginning, you can identify the incident and say, okay, this is when so and so said this or when this thing happened, then I felt this. But that's you, then you drop the story and you just use the feeling, because that's where the problem is. And it's rooted in ignorance. It's rooted in a misperception or following a perception or a view. And it's fired by this proliferation of thoughts. And so we stop doing that, cool it. Observe the feeling in the body where it doesn't have any story attached to it anymore, and you let it move through you. When we let it move through and out of us, and there's calm, we can see the situation more clearly. Maybe you thought you had a lot of things you ought to tell this person, but then suddenly you don't have anything more you have to tell this person because it's not about them, not about what they've said or done. So that's really the process that unfolds. And so, it's the work is our own responsibility. We have to do our own work. The Buddha said he can't make anybody get enlightened. He can only point the way to it. So the comment is that there's basically good and bad about everything. Whatever situation you're in, there are beautiful aspects to it, helpful, skillful. There's the It's challenging always, whether you're around people or you're not around people. Like Ajahn Brahm's way of talking about it, there's layperson suffering, there's monastic suffering, there's junior monastic suffering, and there's senior monastic suffering. We think you said there's no greener pasture. It's like, yeah, whatever it is, we think, oh, it's going to be easier, in that situation. I mean, sometimes realistically, we can go to easier situations. We can simplify our life. We can remove toxic elements out of our life, and it does make it better, mainly through our own action. Keeping precepts really helps people's lives. We see it over and over again. It reduces the anxiety, it reduces the stress, it reduces the distrust. There's so much benefit. However, what I agree with what you say, there's no perfect situation. This is samsara. At some level, we have to accept that. There's not going to be a perfect situation. The problem is internal. And it's going to arise some one way or another. If we have delusion, if we have greed, if we have hatred, it's going to arise in some form. And that's where we can meet it and we can resolve it.
Is the word isolate, is the meaning of isolation and solitude same?
No,
If
I don't
not, what's
think
the difference?
so. Isolation and solitude. So we might be talking the difference between isolation and solitude. For one thing, solitude is, like being by yourself, but it's code for going into meditation. So you have the solitude of jhana or samadhi, no matter really what label you put on it. But there's this joy in the isolation. You're just like by yourself, kind of like lonely is what more what comes up, at least in my perception of those words.
So solitude is better than isolation.
Yes, you could be in isolation and be perfectly happy because you can also have solitude. But for many people, there it would not be productive to be in isolation because they don't yet haven't yet trained the mind to go into solitude. You could put it that way. What are the top beneficial things?
Yeah.
There's this beautiful sutta called The Fruits of the Holy Life that you should read in the Digha Nikaya, I think it is. Yeah. And in the Digha Nikaya, the long discourses, the first chapters to talk about this again and again and again, actually. So part of the benefit, the ones that come to mind are the support for keeping sila. For keeping the precepts. There's a tremendous support for that. Because after all, bhikkhunis have 311 rules. And for some people, you think, oh my God, how can I do that? But and it's really brilliant because there are these very serious offenses. And, those serious offenses are you're supported in avoiding those, very strongly supported in avoiding those by having lesser offenses for minor things ahead in that direction. So you have, like we're not supposed to be alone with a man. Well, that keeps you from getting, physically involved with one. And there are all kinds of like things leading up, the warning signs, and you've got your monastic sisters, or in our case, or brothers, in case of the venerable monks here, to help you notice, like what you're doing, getting a little too close to accepting gold and silver, for example, or some other thing, like some kind of greed or some kind of mistake that would be harmful to people. The minor rules help you to see the very first glimpses of it. So 311 rules keeps you on your toes. You're observing, like, how is my conduct? Would my teacher or would my respected monastic friends find fault with my conduct? So that's very helpful. And that's very basic. And then to be around other meditators is very helpful. If you live in a larger monastery where there's a lot of meditation going on, you feel the vibe and kind of draws you in. You can kind of coast on it a little bit when you're not personally so inspired. That's very helpful. Yeah, in that list, there's a whole bunch of things, developing psychic powers, that's not really necessary at all. But your sensitivity can develop and you can become more aware. So that's very helpful. What would you say? Can you think of any particular?
I think that now that I've said it too, I'm talking about the environment with
Yeah.
around the people, you're supporting your practice. And like the whole focus is really on that. We have the practical database.
People that kind of stand with us are like, wow, you have to deal with all the same stuff I have to deal with too, but more in some ways. Yeah, but yeah, the heart is oriented towards that, not like when you go to work, it's like make more money, get more out of the customer kind of mentality or whatever it is you're doing, like a different goal. And you're surrounded by people with those kinds of goals. What is the next effect? You have enlightenment is the goal, and you don't have to worry about building a bigger temple or, something. I mean, monastics can get into those things. But hopefully they'll have friends around them to like, hey, this is not the goal. So the thing that's important though, I think, is to remember that as a layperson, you can really do a lot to practice. And you can really go a long way, way, way up to the like last step off the edge into Nibbana, and really recognize that. And surround yourself by good people who keep precepts, who reinforce that in each other. Do activities that really stretch your generosity, not just to the temple, but wherever, and really, go deeper into meditation practice. Seek out, if you're a lay person, I think I've always found it really beneficial being near a monastery to participate there and really kind of take it seriously.
Well, I was just thinking, being in a larger monastery, this may not be true because certainly the forest monks, Ajahn Mun, but you have a chance of being around a really accomplished senior monastic.
Yes, it's very helpful,
And
especially in
that
the
is
beginning.
so inspiring.
Yes, it is. And we can draw near to that regardless of whether we're lay or monastic. I would really recommend it. Okay, so this is a good question about meditating like 30 minutes every night in your room and wondering, am I making any progress? Is my mind calm enough? Is it calm? This is doubt. And it's really good to find a teacher and talk about it. Talk about what progress looks like. What do we want to see develop? And the Buddha was pretty clear about this. Those states of calm should include a joy arising that you can feel in your body. And when the mind becomes clear enough and still enough, that there's no hindrances, no desire. I don't want anything. I don't want to get rid of anything. There's no sleepiness. There's no restlessness. There's no doubt. You're making progress. So there are these kind of guideposts along the way. And I would really recommend reading Stillness Flowing. It's the biography of Ajahn Chah.
Yes,
Have,
I have to listen to it. That's how organized.
okay. The biography includes not just his life, but also his teachings. And you might find in there, like there are some descriptions of meditation and discussion of what, like his way of talking about meditation that could help you see, oh yeah, I experienced this. Or I haven't experienced that. What can I do? Again, finding a teacher that you feel like you can relate to and trust, then you can talk about like what's going on for me and how do I work with it. But don't just stay in the doubt. And don't just do the same practice all the time and feel like it's going nowhere. We really have the responsibility to reflect on the practice that we're doing, and if we don't see results, we should reach out to someone to talk to them. And you have to ask yourself whether it matters. I mean, separating the body from the mental faculties is fine, but the Buddha said you can't really separate the mental faculties. They're all connected. And that's in the suttas. So identifying that this body is this physical thing made of these elements, has these different parts. And it's not me and not mine. It's a process running all on its own with its own timing. Yes, I can influence it here and there. I can stop breathing for a second and then I got to breathe again. I can't make, my heart stronger somehow or beat more regularly or whatever. It's not really mine.
I think what she tried to ask you is because she asked me earlier in Thai language, so
okay.
I can identify her question. I think she tried to identify because in the first Vipassana 16 step, the first step they tried, the Buddha taught us to identify which one's mine, which one is matter.
Are we talking about the Anapanasati 16 steps?
It's not Anapanasati.
You're talking about Abhidhamma.
Vipassana 16 steps.
So if you're not getting bliss in your meditation, I wouldn't worry about Abhidhamma 1 second.
Mm-hmm.
It's taking you into this instead of this.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to let go of all the mental proliferation and practice samatha. And you can practice vipassana, but not that kind. Practice just the Dhamma principles that you see in the suttas.
Because that's pretty higher level.
Well, it's not higher. Abhidhamma is not higher level. So many forest masters say, don't waste your time on it. Because if it brings more proliferation of the mind and more doubt and more questions, it's not helping. So just really simplify it. We are just about time to close. Any one last question or comment? So I think before we go, Aya and I will chant a blessing.
Okay.
This is Jayanto, which is a victory chant. So this is meant to imply the big victory. Jayanto Bodhiya Mule Sakyana Nandi Wadana Ewanta Wijayo Ho Ijaya Sujaya Mangale Aparajita Palam Kesi Se Pata Vipokare Avise Kesa Babudana Agapato pamodati sunakatam sumangalam supapatam suhutitam sukano sumahuto chasuitam brahmachari supadakina kayakama vachakama padakina Padakina manokamam panijite padakina padakina nikatvana labhantate padakina. May you have every good blessing. May all the devas protect you by the power of all the Buddhas. May you ever be well. May you have every good blessing. May all the devas protect you by the power of all the Dhamma. May you ever be well. May you have every good blessing. May all the devas protect you by the power of all the Sangha. May you ever be well.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.